Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
We are just about ready for the Beltway Blitz. We'll be covering the Nats and the National Football League as we blitz around the Beltway today. All of our coverage of Baseball on the Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. The Nats are on the air tonight here on 106.7 The Fan. Pregame at 6:15, first pitch at 6:45 as they kick off their longest homestand of the season, 10 consecutive games at Nationals Park with Jake Irvin on the hill. With that said, let's get to the Beltway Blitz. And one of the voices of Nationals baseball, our pal Dave Jagler. Jags, before we talk about tonight's Nats game, we should let people know that on Tuesday, a very special Dave Jagler in-studio appearance. You'll be hanging out with me from 2 to 3 right here on Grant and Danny. You'll be happy to know that on the rundown, I've got a little baseball. Also, a deep discussion on long snappers.
Nice. I was hoping you'd feed me like some gas station cheeseburgers or something.
We have considered some cheeseburgers being brought in for you to sample. That could be on the itinerary, but no, it'll be good. How long ago was it that you were doing talk radio? I know that's in your background.
Oh man. That was back pre-Nationals. I mean, 2001 to 2005 in Boston and then in Charlotte in the 90s. So yeah, I gotta dig out my old headphones. These things like a relic from another age. They cover your whole ear. It's awesome.
The non-headset mic headphones.
They're non-headsets. Yes.
Dust those off for sure. But I am looking forward to kicking it with you. Danny's on vacay, so we'll have some of our favorite regular guests on in studio. But let's talk about these Nationals home for 10. Kind of curious to see what the turnout is like on the homestand. I know fans, it's been a tough week. They sold off some pieces, but there's still plenty of reasons to watch some very young, up-and-coming talent, including James Wood, on the roster right now. What's your kind of headline storyline as we kick off the homestand?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Jake Irvin tonight, I mean, it's always a good night when he pitches. And yeah, I mean, I think the attendance has been great over the summer. We've got some exciting, you know, giveaways here on this homestand. Got a post-game concert coming up next week. So it's going to be a good homestand. I mean, it seems like we've had so many three-city road trips. We haven't had a three-series homestand. So as you said, this is going to be the longest one of the year. And, you know, James Wood, I thought, had a very good road trip. You know, coming out of the All-Star break, some good adjustments. Back to drawing his walks again. And, you know, C.J. Abrams has kind of been on again, off again. So now he's due for a breakout here with the month of August beginning today. And, you know, maybe with the trade of Lane Thomas, you know, we're kind of looking at the stopgap in right field now. And with Dylan Cruz playing a little bit of right field at AAA, maybe the countdown is on to see when Dylan Cruz is up here. So that's obviously something to keep an eye on. But as far as who's here now, you know, James Wood has been doing great. And let's see if CJ can have a big month of August like he did in April and June. So every other month he's been on. So it's time for him to be on.
Yeah, you mentioned Abrams and the weird season he's had. Maybe a top five or so player in baseball in April and in June, and then May and July, mm-hmm. It's been a big struggle. What do you make of that? And do you agree with me that if you compare May to July, I'm actually way more encouraged by the bad July, because it's not like he was swinging at everything. He was still having pretty good at-bats and had a decent process, and the results didn't really follow.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. As far as July, I think May he was in a bad place. You know, maybe got a little too swing happy, and you know, the team was struggling around him. So I've got to do it all. It's on my shoulders, and he got out of his game. And then you know, June was back to you know attacking pitches in the strike zone and playing like he did in April. And I think July was better. He just didn't get a whole lot of hits to fall. I think teams also have been attacking him a little differently. I think we saw starting in the San Diego series and on the road trip, they're really attacking him with elevated fastballs and then going down and in with the breaking ball. So, you know, to me, if he can lay off that high fastball, he'll get back on track here in August.
You mentioned Jake Irvin pitching tonight, 128 innings on the season. He has been the Nats' best pitcher. It's not really debatable at this point. At 27 years old, the big 6'6" right-hander has also been a horse. He's got a chance to finish the season strong here. What do you think it's going to take for him to not fall off and to continue to hang some of those six-inning, two-run outings that we've become accustomed to?
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel he's in a much better place coming out of the All-Star break than he was going in. I mean, I think we've talked about before when I've been on, maybe a little fatigue caught him, and then that little three-day, you know, kind of just put the ball down over the All-Star break and then getting back into his routine, starting the third game out of the break. I mean, there are a few more off days sprinkled in here in August and definitely in September, so you know, I don't know if the plan is for him to go or for the team to go to a six-man rotation at some point, but I think the extra day sprinkled in here or there will help Irvin. I mean, as you say, he's got the frame, he's got the build. It's just a matter of doing it for the first time. And last year, he made it just about to the end of the season and had some struggles at the end. So I think having been through that last year will put him in a better place this year to know what it takes to finish that fifth and sixth month strong. I mean, you know, Jake is a mature kid. He's 27 years old, so he's young in terms of big league time. But he's mature in his approach, and he's mature in his process. So he takes great care of his body. I would look to him to keep up this run of successful starts and hopefully finish the season like he's been over the first 4 months.
Jags, you referenced James Wood earlier and the fact that he's been swinging it pretty well on this recent road trip. OPS over 900 over his last seven games. What have you noticed from him in left? Is he getting more comfortable out there after you know the first homestand where it was pretty clear he just hadn't played left field a lot?
Yeah, I think it's still a work in progress. I'm really encouraged by what I've seen offensively. I think defensively there's room to grow, but I mean, again, he's 21. It is a new position for him. He's obviously a terrific athlete. I just think at sometimes it feels like he's struggling reading the ball off the bat. There's some balls that, you know, kind of dropping in front of him. It seems like he's more comfortable playing deep. So, you know, kind of his first movement is a little bit slow, that first step reaction when the ball is put in play. I think that's just a matter of trying to read the ball off the bat better and making better decisions there. I mean, I think once he's able to get going, we know he has closing speed, and he's honestly, Grant, had the ability a couple times where he's misread the ball. He covers so much ground. His reach is so long, he can actually still make a play on a ball where he is kind of fooled on it. We saw that on the road trip where he came in, had to go back, and he reached up with that long arm like he was grabbing a rebound, and he still made a really nice catch. So it is a work in progress, and I think that the more reps that he gets out there, the better. And it's clear that they want him to be out there, because after the trade of Lane Thomas, they could have put him in right field those games in Arizona. But, you know, it was Call, it was Blankenhorn in right. So I think they're committed to him getting comfortable in that position here over the last 2 months of the season.
Tuesday, in studio, 2 to 3, tell your friends, Dave Jagler on 106.7 The Fan. Look forward to it, buddy. We'll see you then.
I'll tell my friends as well.
Be good. There's Dave Jagler on our Beltway Blitz on G&D. Let's keep it moving. And talk a little football after last night's Hall of Fame game with our buddy Benjamin Brown. So, Ben, why don't we start with the two teams that played? The Chicago Bears have the third easiest schedule. Caleb Williams, who we didn't see last night, the number one overall pick, might have the best trio of wide receivers to help him out in all of the National Football League. How much of a chance do you give them to be a surprise playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways the market has in some ways caught up to them. I think, you know, obviously before heading into the draft and free agent cycle, they were probably a team to buy into. But, you know, they very much, I would say, kind of hit the area, the nail on the head at every single angle from, you know, an offseason standpoint. And I think in a lot of ways are kind of this trendy up-and-coming type team. And to be honest with you, I do want to buy into the hype. I do think it's valid and justified. Like you said, I don't necessarily think they're the best wide receiver unit in football, but they have to be close. And if you buy into Caleb Williams at all, this is a team that when you look around the rest of the NFC, like there is some potential to be relatively underwhelming from a lot of other teams. And they are very much a team that I think could not only make some noise getting back to the playoffs, but could even maybe win a playoff game and really establish themselves as front runners for the conference, I would say, when it's all said and done heading into next season.
Speaking of trendy up-and-coming teams and the Texans, do you think C.J. Stroud repeats, duplicates last year's performance statistically, like adds to 4,100 yards, goes over 25 touchdowns? Or is there going to be a little bit of give and take there because there's going to be adjustments made to him even though he is improved?
Yeah, I very much buy into the idea that, you know, a second-year player with some film under him is maybe a little, not necessarily easier to defend, but there's more variety in the ways in which you can approach him. I also think in some ways, you know, his turnover-worthy play rate didn't really match up with the number of interceptions he actually faced. So having a little bit more of those setbacks as well, like there is definitely some room for him to regress. Now, the opposite side of that argument is obviously, you know, continuing to surround himself with, you know, adequate and, you know, above average playmakers at the wide receiver position, I think could maybe in some ways circumvent that. But I expect even with a little drop off for the Texans to kind of still be in the very much thick of things. I think defensively, they're still kind of evolving and arriving, but are going to be in a better spot in DeMeco Ryan's system in this next year. So I think even with a little bit of a setback from CJ Stroud, which should be fully expected, I very much think that, you know, the upside case for them very much makes sense with kind of what we're hearing from a lot of the people that kind of are hyping up some of these teams headed into the, you know, regular season big games.
Ben Brown covering the NFL for us here on our Blitz. Bill Barnwell of ESPN wrote a really good piece about Brock Purdy last week and about what he might be able to get on the open market when it's time. And he suggested $65 million, not out of the question. And he kind of ran through a bunch of why that might happen. Well, right now the story on him is he's throwing a lot of picks in practice, which I think is outrageous and stupid and doesn't matter, and I can't believe that's a story. But I do want to know, do you view Brock Purdy as like a top-shelf quarterback who is actually the reason San Francisco's offense works, or a beneficiary in a lot of ways that is replaceable by Kyle Shanahan with those weapons?
I think it's a really good question and one that we still probably don't have the full answer to. There obviously are arguments and people on both sides who feel really passionately about it, but to me, like the situation around which Brock Purdy has been most successful has been a symptom of Kyle Shanahan being so great at a yards after the catch ability and a really strong receiving unit. And I think the question is going to be with Brock Purdy, if you pay him top of market range and you lose some of these guys like the Deebo Samuels or maybe the Brandon Ayuks of the world, like, can he elevate an offense then? And that's still the question that we're not really going to have answered until he actually does get paid. I'm assuming he is at least going to get top 10 type money. But for me, I think in a lot of ways it is going to be similar to, you know, a Kirk Cousins type situation where he could even put up really good stats, but come that must-win type game in the playoffs, it might not be enough for him to actually get there on a veteran type deal. So winning with him on a rookie deal is a completely different calculation than what it would be on a veteran deal. And I think for that reason, I would have a little bit more pause in paying Brock Purdy than what I think even the San Francisco 49ers are going to do coming up here in the next year, near year or two.
It just seems to me as if we do have the answer. You know, everyone says that we don't, but they went to the Super Bowl before Purdy with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know that their offense is better now, but I feel like that is the whole point, right? The previous quarterback, who we all know is not that good, who went to Vegas and got benched for Aiden O'Connell, who the receiver show on Netflix told us Devontae Adams couldn't stand. Like, they were in the Super Bowl and should have beat the Chiefs with him. Isn't that the answer?
Yeah. It is, and I think that's really got to be, like, the pushback. And to me, like, I know Brock Purdy, people think it's key to that, but, like, if they lose Trent Williams this year, even if they have Brock Purdy in the fold, that's going to be a completely different-looking offense, and one that could struggle quite a bit. So I think if you don't buy into Brock Purdy, I think this year is really a key point in maybe the development not necessarily being at the top-end range that we projected in the past couple of seasons. When that happens, I do think we very much are going to have the answer, like you said, for sure.
So I couldn't really fully grasp yesterday what was changed about the rule with the cheat motion, as we call it, that the Dolphins and the Rams and some of these other McVay, McDaniels, Shanahan teams, all those guys that were here in Washington do. But for people listening, it's the thing the Dolphins did, where they got like running head starts and started to go up the field at the snap and made famous, and then everyone started doing it all over the league. And now it sounds like it's going to be penalized or flagged differently. What do you make of that, and what do we need to know?
Yeah, it's definitely like the CFL-type rule of differentiation, right? But it's basically like any sort of upfield movement, you know, from a backfield-type player is basically going to be false start or illegal motion, basically, depending on where he actually tried to direct his movement.
That was always the case. Did they just not officiate it with the same fervor?
I think they didn't initiate with the same fervor. I think if there was like a symptom of them running straight in line, they wouldn't necessarily call it. I think it's going to be like kind of a point of emphasis. And I do think we have some of those evolutions of rules happen where there's going to be more of a focal point on it. And I do think we're going to see it probably flagged more dramatically than what it definitely should have been, I would say, in prior seasons. And I think overall, it's probably going to help defenses a little bit for sure, but probably not be all that dramatic of a move that we're really going to see on, you know, a macro type level from a data perspective for sure.
What is your expectation for Jaden Daniels this year?
I think there's a lot of intrigue. I think from a fantasy perspective, I'm excited, to be honest with you. Like, I think as far as like, you know, a little bit further down from the elite quarterback tier, Jaden Daniels offers a lot of intriguing upside. The help is going to be seeing them the first couple of weeks of the season, seeing how, you know, Kingsbury is kind of operating this Washington offense coordinator position. Like, that's going to be the key to me, but I think they have the weapons in place. And to me, I know it's really easy to side with Caleb Williams as far as like the upside case, who's going to be rookie of the year. But to me, like, there's no other guy that I'd really want to buy into outside of Jaden Daniels. And I think they, in a lot of ways, have a similar makeup to what the Bears are putting forth and could also kind of be one of these surprising type teams that definitely, you know, exceeds expectation with a rookie quarterback at the helm in their first year.
Last one, Ben Brown, our Beltway Blitz on the NFL. Eagles or Cowboys, who wins the NFC East?
Oh, that is a good question. I honestly am not in love with either. I think when it's all said and done, I'm more inclined to see the Cowboys kind of have the wheels fall off. When that happens, I do think it opens up, you know, doors for other teams. I am still in some ways concerned about, you know, the Eagles' direction at both offensive and defensive coordinator positions. I don't know if Kellen Moore is necessarily going to fix what the issues were offensively last year. So I think both are probably worse off. And I think the Eagles probably win in what's a little bit more of an ugly division than what we're kind of projecting right now, for sure.
Ben, we appreciate you, bro. Good catching up. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show. Enjoy some football.
Yes, sir, we will. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny without Danny today on the Fan. At 5 o'clock, Robert Mays of The Athletic, who's on a camp tour to discuss some of the stops he's made. At 6 o'clock, Logan Paulson, who's out at training camp every single day, on how Jaden Daniels has performed in practices. But next, speaking of practice, I was out there yesterday, and I've got some burning questions out of Ashburn, including some predictions on who's going to win two roster battles. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
.6:15 tonight, I will say goodbye, and Charlie and Dave will take over these airwaves for Nats pregame. 6:45 first pitch, the Nationals hosting a playoff-bound Milwaukee Brewers team for the first game of a three-game set at Nationals Park. The Nats are home for 10 consecutive games. They kick off their homestand tonight. I got three burning questions for you from my time out in Ashburn yesterday. The first of which involves two camp competitions that I think are up for grabs. And that is, who's going to win the job at left tackle? Cornelius Lucas, who seemed like the favorite going into camp, was the incumbent on the roster. Or Brandon Coleman, who's the rookie, was drafted 67th overall out of Texas Christian, who has played very well in practice and presumably is going to get a longer look because of that. Lucas was unavailable yesterday, was excused, absent, and Coleman in 11-on-11s, I thought, shined. And maybe even more importantly, felt and said after practice he was very, very comfortable with the playbook, with the role on that side of the line of scrimmage. He had played a lot of right tackle. He's played some guard at camp, but he felt back at home at left tackle where he played the majority of last season. He also was excellent in one-on-ones. In fact, today, Dan Quinn, who had the benefit, presumably, of watching all the tape and going back and studying the film from practice, as coaches do, watched the one-on-one drills and really sang the praises of Brandon Coleman, his left tackle. Coleman was someone I caught up with out in practice just a couple of days ago. You heard the interview here on Grant and Danny yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I think I'll find a home at some point, but I'm always keep that versatility up there. You never know what can happen. Then you might be able to be a left tackle like I was in 22, and then injuries happen. You got to move to a different spot. So I know I'm just working on staying ready on both sides and being comfortable wherever on the line.
I've been thinking Lucas was going to be the starter in Tampa Bay in week one all along, but I just liked what I saw from Brandon Coleman yesterday. It's a little early to put in Sharpie that he's going to be legit, that he's going to be a long-term answer, a bookend here in Washington. But I think I'm going to jot him down in pencil as the starter against the Bucks on the left side. If he struggles in the preseason, that won't happen, right? If he has a string of practices that aren't as good as what he looked like yesterday. That's not going to be the case. But I just think he looked like an NFL starter. And let's be frank, it's not like Cornelius Lucas, who's a journeyman swing tackle, who's a third tackle on a good team, is necessarily going to stand in his way or block him. You've got a prospect that you want to see. You don't really have an incumbent veteran you're paying a lot of money to or who means a lot to you long term. Why not give the kid a chance? So I'll say Coleman over Lucas for now at left tackle. Pencil, not pen, though, is what I'm going to write with. The other camp battle is at kicker, where things are heating up. Ramiz Ahmed was the lone kicker in training camp until just yesterday when Riley Patterson showed up. Riley Patterson and Ramiz Ahmed have both ended practices with five kicks each of the last 2 days. Yesterday, they were both perfect, 5 for 5. Today, they both missed one field goal from the same distance. I think it was right around 48 yards. They move back and end up booting from as far as 53. But identical, 9 for 10 for Ahmed and Patterson to this point. This was Dan Quinn on the kicking competition.
Maybe almost half the league have two into that space, but that and other positions are, you know, still part of the competition. With that specific one, you know, getting into the games, that'll be an important piece, right, to where, you know, the field goals, the extra points, and the kickoff, you know. So, like, seeing that, you guys will see some of the kickoff and kickoff return at practice today, but that'll be, you know, the third part of that.
I think Riley Patterson ends up being their kicker. Now, I'm going to tell you, as I say that, that this is based on almost nothing. Here's my logic. Riley Patterson's kicked in the NFL before. Ramiz Ahmed has not. Ahmed has been around, right? But he has had success at the UFL level. That's kind of the extent of his in-game big moment boots. And he's 29 years old. He was with Green Bay for one game, handled kickoffs, but does not have place kicking on his ledger on the back of the football card. Whereas Riley Patterson has not only done that, and he's had some success. I mean, he really actually was pretty good at it. The question for me on him, just looking at the numbers, is how big of a leg does he have? Because his teams have never really asked him to kick much from beyond 50. But he kicked in Detroit in 2021, Jacksonville in 2022, and then in both Cleveland and then Detroit again in 2023. A total of four teams in 3 seasons, rather, and in his career, 67 field goal attempts. He's made 59 of those. That's an 88% clip, which would rank in the top third of the NFL probably over the course of a season. So just based on the resume being a little bit beefier and the fact that he's been around a little longer, I'll roll with Riley Patterson and assume he wins the job. He's also, again, if you're comparing ages, a little bit younger as far as the kicking competition goes. So you have a guy who's got more experience, and he's 5 years the junior of Ahmed, so worthwhile to maybe keep him around as someone you could possibly build with on special teams. Question number two of my burning questions to answer coming out of training camp. Why is there not more juice for Jaden Daniels? I cannot figure this out. What am I missing? The last time this team had a number two overall pick quarterback who had won a Heisman, he couldn't get to the practice field without wading through hundreds of fans trying to stop him for autographs and pictures. Everywhere Robert Griffin went, people chanted, RG3. And I feel like nobody cares that Jaden Daniels is having a really good camp, that the reviews have been off the charts, that everybody's raving about what a worker he is, that he's slinging the ball really well, he's been accurate. It seems like you can't put together as good a camp as he has, that you couldn't have imagined him to look this good this quickly, and no one said a negative word about the guy. There's not one person in the building that is fueling the fires or fanning the flames of any kind of fear that he's not going to be the guy, that they don't like work habits. I mean, that's the kind of thing that's been happening around here for years. But everyone's pulling the rope in the same direction. They all want this guy to succeed. Another reason why he might, just that they're doing this thing the right way. One of the most Jaden Daniels friendly analysts in the country, a guy that absolutely loves him, is Ryan Clark of ESPN. Here's what he had to say today about Daniels.
Jaden Daniels is going to have that C.J. Stroud type of year. He's going to be that guy that we're talking about going into next year with a chance to launch himself into the upper echelon of quarterbacks. I just left Commanders camp, and everyone is raving about the person he is, and we've already seen the player.
So I didn't realize this until today, but Ryan Clark's son, Jordan, played at Arizona State with Jaden Daniels. So I'm not dismissing any of his takes on Daniels, but I've always kind of thought, man, do they share an agent? Like, God, he loves Jaden Daniels more than anyone I've ever seen on TV. But here's the thing. He's allowed to, because all Jaden Daniels has ever done is perform. So he knows Daniels personally, I'm sure. They have some relationship. His son was at Arizona State with Daniels. But that sounds almost nefarious, or like I'm poking at why he likes Daniels, when the fact is he might have just been one of the first ones on the scene. He might have been around the kid, saw he was the real deal, saw what kind of worker he is, saw that he had an NFL demeanor and makeup, and then watched him on the field at Arizona State, even though he was kind of shell of what he came at LSU, and decided this guy's going to be the next great thing in the NFL. So I'm not going to dismiss Clark's take or opinion on Daniels based on how close he is to the player. I'm going to actually choose to assume he's got good information on the type of person that Jaden Daniels is. But he is buying all of the stock, it seems like, and he's talking about a possible C.J. Stroud season, which should be music to your ears. Which brings me to burning camp question number three. How many Rivera draft picks are going to be on the chopping block this summer? Have you guys thought about this? I was talking to Ben Standing of The Athletic on the sideline yesterday, and then we were walking to our cars after practice. And we were bouncing some names off each other. There are going to be a ton of Rivera-era draftees that are on the bubble that need to really help themselves in the preseason. Here are some names of some guys. Now, some of these guys are going to make it. It goes without saying. But these are the types of guys I'm talking about. A former first-round pick in Jamin Davis, who's practicing at a new position, who's not really flashing a ton yet. I think Jamin Davis makes the roster. I'm not convinced of that. Maybe he ends up getting traded. That might be the best scenario for everybody. Could a first-round pick just a few years ago be released by this new staff? It's very possible. How about former second-round pick Fidarian Mathis? Same thing. You've got Allen. You've got Payne. You drafted your own second-round defensive tackle in Johnny Newton. You've got guys like John Ridgeway who have played okay in a pinch and when asked to get on the field and push the pocket, they've been able to. We should not be in a situation where a Davis round one, Mathis round two are cuttable this soon into their career when they're not really making a whole lot of money. But here we are. It was just a disastrous run of drafts for the Marty Party. I would say that fourth rounder Braden Daniels is in trouble. Is third round pick Ricky Stromberg, the interior offensive lineman, going to make this roster? Sixth-round running back Chris Rodriguez, who I really like, is in a scratching, clawing fight for a roster spot. I think K.J. Henry should be expected to make it as the last defensive end in the Clemson product, but he is on the bubble as well. Get ready. I just think there's going to be a huge departure from a lot of these young Rivera players that were drafted. This was Dan Quinn talking about Jamin Davis this week.
Yeah, Dave, that's one of the positions that I spoke about, to have multi-position work, and we'll continue to do that with him. He's got speed and length, you know, like an outside backer does. So you need work at it, and it's not something that I'll know in 1 or 2 days. So we'll work all the way through to add another pass rusher to a group that adds depth, that adds value. So you'll see him some in some third downs and some 2 minutes, you know, working off the edge, just to keep pushing, you know, what else can we do? How else can we feature players? And Jamin is a perfect example of that, Dave.
I think it's becoming in vogue to talk about Davis getting cut, or it's certainly starting to become the trendy discussion. I get the discourse. I don't buy it yet. He's still very athletic, moves well enough, can do enough that I think that's a piece of clay I want to try to mold if I'm this coaching staff. But it probably doesn't even matter, really. I mean, the fact is there a spot for him? Right now, he's down the depth chart at linebacker behind guys like Jordan McGee, who was just drafted in the fifth round. And at defensive end, he's not cracking the rotation ahead of speed rusher Dante Fowler, run stuffer Cleland Farrell. He's down the board there, too. That matters more. Maybe you dangle him and he's a trade chip and somebody thinks first round pick, even though he probably shouldn't have been, speed, can go sideline to sideline, can hit, you could stand him up and rush a little bit. There's got to be a place where you could get some type of draft pick for Jamin Davis, and maybe that's ultimately what they try to do. But he may well be here. There's a lot of football, both practices, games ahead, and you don't make the roster on August 2nd. You know, you form the roster about a month from right now. So he'll get the last say on whether or not he's a Commander. That's the beauty of this game. Next on Grant and Danny, the stadium over in Landover, Maryland, formerly known as FedEx Field. I now call it the X. It was ranked among 89 other sports venues, 1 through 90, all of the major sports in the country, based on reviews of people who have been to games there, Yelp and Facebook and otherwise. Where do you think the X ranked out of 90 arenas, ballparks, and stadiums? This is fun. We'll do it next on GND. The Athletic's Robert Mays joins the show at 5. He's been on an NFL camp tour that included the Commanders over the last couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to spinning around football with him right here on G&D Without Danny. He is on vacation starting today through next week. Brooksgate, which is a sports book, came out with a list 1 through 90 of all of the stadiums, ballparks, and arenas in the country ranked by the average review and the rating given to these venues on Yelp, Google, and TripAdvisor. I think Facebook was included as well. So I don't know how mathematically involved this was or how gospel anyone should assume this to be, but it's also not just a list where someone says, oh, yeah, I've been to Truist Park once, and I think it's better than the Kia Center that the Magic play in or Ball Arena where the Denver Nuggets are, okay? What's really hard is you're comparing the beautiful ballpark that you go to in Major League Baseball to the kind of seats and concrete arena that you sit in for basketball to a football stadium. But, again, it's about experience. It's about just the overall feel when you leave there. And the algorithm is Yelp, Google, TripAdvisor, Facebook reviews. So take that for what it's worth. Darius, I need a drum roll to tell people out of 90 venues where Commanders Field, the artist formerly known as FedEx Field, came in. Commanders Field ranked 90th out of 90 venues. Which feels about right. Although I would tell you that the Oakland Coliseum, where they have sewage that routinely backs up and broadcasters have had to tussle with animals that are running around in their booth as they're calling play-by-play, and where they, until very recently, played football games with baseball infield dirt in the middle of the field.
Oh, no.
The Coliseum ranks 89th, just one spot ahead of the Commanders. So that's the company. Here's what I don't really get, though. Down there at the bottom in 88th is Allegiant Stadium, which I think, of all the NFL stadiums I've been to, and there was a time when I'd been to all but four, if there's a new one that I'm not thinking about, I guess it's possible that that number's grown by one or two. But Allegiant Stadium's one of my favorite that I've ever been to. I thought it was excellent. Right there in Vegas on the Strip, I loved it. So that doesn't make a lot of sense for me, and that is worth almost throwing the whole exercise out for. Although, when your list has the X listed 90th out of 90, it tells me somebody did some number crunching that worked out.
Yeah, SoFi Stadium is down somewhere in that 80s range as well, which is
so. Here's what I'm wondering about that. SoFi is 85th, and then Levi Stadium is 87th. I'm wondering if part of the algorithm that they put together is also number of comments or quantity of positive reviews, because those are so new. Allegiant, Levi Stadium, where the Niners are, SoFi. You know, a lot of the NFL stadiums near the top are a little bit older. Lumen Field of the Seahawks is the highest ranking NFL stadium outside of Lambeau Field. The next NFL stadium on this list, just scrolling quickly, would be Heinz Field, which is now called Acrisure Stadium, I think, for the Steelers at number 16. Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, 17. But it's a lot of ballparks early on. The top five venues in America, according to Brooksgate, are Lambeau Field, which is hard to argue with from a football standpoint. I've had two of my best NFL viewing experiences and days I've ever had at Lambeau Field. If you've never been, you should absolutely go. If you take nothing else out of this radio show today, the next time Washington goes to Green Bay, you should go to Lambeau Field and do the full Lambeau experience, park in someone's driveway, go to the bathroom on their toilet, eat in their garage. Like, these are things that happen in the neighborhood there. You pay $20-$30 and you get a full day at their house, basically, and waddle over to the stadium and just enjoy it. It's the best. But Lambeau's one. PNC Park in Pittsburgh is two, which is my favorite ballpark in America, probably. Camden Yards in Baltimore is three. Can't argue with that. Grew up going there. It's immaculate and gorgeous. Utah Street, with the longest building on the East Coast. The warehouse jetting into right field. Busch Stadium, where the Cardinals play, being fourth. That's aggressive for me. I think that's a nice ballpark, but settle down. And then Oracle Park in San Francisco, where the Giants play, widely considered to be right there with PNC and Camden among the elite in Major League Baseball, is fifth. They also have Fenway seventh. That's a great baseball museum, and that's a really historical, amazing place to go. But I'm not a big Fenway guy. I think Fenway's overrated. In the same vein, Wrigley, which is also a museum, they've both been around. They were built a year apart. One was built in 1911. One was built in 1912. I think I have those numbers right. I'm team Wrigley big time. I love Wrigley Field, which has been renovated beautifully. I think Fenway is uncomfortable and not only small, but like just walking around is difficult. I'm not a huge fan of Fenway, if not for the history anyway. But obviously, it's worth going to.
Yeah, but, and just to round out the couple other D.C. sports ones, Nationals Park ranks 32, and then Capital One Arena, home of the Wizards and Caps, ranks 70th.
By the way, Nats Park at 32 is decent, right?
It's pretty surprising. Because
it's a good showing for Nats Park.
Generally, when you look at lists that involve baseball stadiums, Nats Park kind of usually ranks somewhere in the 20s. On this particular list, they got
some love.
I will
say, just looking quickly, and I haven't, you know, figured all of them out, it does seem like it's very baseball friendly, this list. Like, I would imagine they're still in the 20 range. There's not that many baseball ballparks behind them. It looks like a lot of the basketball venues. And again, they did this based on ratings and reviews on Yelp, Google, TripAdvisor, and Facebook. But however they did it, I don't know if you agree with this, Darius. It seems like it skews a little bit toward people liking the ballparks more than certainly the arenas and, to some extent, the NFL stadium.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. And like you also mentioned before, it seems like some of the newer stadiums definitely aren't getting love. Because I see like Chase Center, which is the new arena that the Warriors have. That ranks in the 80s. Like, that doesn't make any sense. A brand spanking new arena that's probably
Intuit
beautiful.
Dome is listed at 84th. It hasn't even opened
yet. Nobody's even stepped foot in there yet, except for Darren Haynes.
Yeah, what Yelp reviews are you getting on a place that's never been sat in? I'm not telling you it's gospel, but these lists are sometimes entertaining. And the fact that the X is listed at 90th out of 90 should be a scarlet letter badge of honor for those of you season ticket holders that'll go out there all season long. Let's talk to Robert Mays of The Athletic about his tour around training camps and his time with the Commanders next on Grant and Danny. The Athletic's Robert Mays joins the show at 5. He's been on an NFL camp tour that included the Commanders over the last couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to spinning around football with him right here on G&D without Danny. He is on vacation starting today through next week. Brooksgate, which is a sports book, came out with a list 1 through 90 of all of the stadiums, ballparks, and arenas in the country ranked by the average review and the rating given to these venues on Yelp, Google, and TripAdvisor. I think Facebook was included as well. So I don't know how mathematically involved this was or how gospel anyone should assume this to be, but it's also not just a list where someone says, oh, yeah, I've been to Truist Park once, and I think it's better than the Kia Center that the Magic play in or Ball Arena where the Denver Nuggets are, okay? What's really hard is you're comparing the beautiful ballpark that you go to in Major League Baseball to the kind of seats and concrete arena that you sit in for basketball to a football stadium. But, again, it's about experience. It's about just the overall feel when you leave there. And the algorithm is Yelp, Google, TripAdvisor, Facebook reviews. So take that for what it's worth. Darris, I need a drum roll to tell people out of 90 venues where Commanders Field, the artist formerly known as FedEx Field, came in. Commanders Field ranked 90th out of 90 venues, which feels about right. Although I would tell you that the Oakland Coliseum, where they have sewage that routinely backs up and broadcasters have had to tussle with animals that are running around in their booth as they're calling play-by-play, and where they, until very recently, played football games with baseball infield dirt in the middle of the field.
Oh, no.
The Coliseum ranks 89th, just one spot ahead of the Commanders. So that's the company. Here's what I don't really get, though. Down there at the bottom in 88th is Allegiant Stadium, which I think, of all the NFL stadiums I've been to, and there was a time when I'd been to all but four, if there's a new one that I'm not thinking about, I guess it's possible that that number's grown by one or two. But Allegiant Stadium's one of my favorite that I've ever been to. I thought it was excellent. Right there in Vegas on the Strip, I loved it. So that doesn't make a lot of sense for me, and that is worth almost throwing the whole exercise out for. Although, when your list has the X listed 90th out of 90, it tells me somebody did some number crunching that worked out.
Yeah, SoFi Stadium is down somewhere in that 80s range as well, which is...
So here's like what I'm wondering crazy about that. SoFi is 85th, and then Levi Stadium is 87th. I'm wondering if part of the algorithm that they put together is also number of comments or quantity of positive reviews, because those are so new. Allegiant, Levi Stadium where the Niners are, SoFi. You know, a lot of the NFL stadiums near the top are a little bit older. Lumen Field of the Seahawks is the highest ranking NFL stadium outside of Lambeau Field. The next NFL stadium on this list, just scrolling quickly, would be Heinz Field, which is now called Acrisure Stadium, I think, for the Steelers at number 16. Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, 17. But it's a lot of ballparks early on. The top five venues in America, according to Brooksgate, are Lambeau Field, which is hard to argue with from a football standpoint. I've had two of my best NFL viewing experiences and days I've ever had at Lambeau Field. If you've never been, you should absolutely go. If you take nothing else out of this radio show today, the next time Washington goes to Green Bay, you should go to Lambeau Field and do the full Lambeau experience, park in someone's driveway, go to the bathroom on their toilet, eat in their garage. Like, these are things that happen in the neighborhood there. You pay $20-$30 and you get a full day at their house, basically, and waddle over to the stadium and just enjoy it. It's the best. But Lambeau's one. PNC Park in Pittsburgh is two, which is my favorite ballpark in America, probably. Camden Yards in Baltimore is three. Can't argue with that. Grew up going there. It's immaculate and gorgeous. Utah Street with the longest building on the East Coast, the warehouse jetting into right field. Busch Stadium, where the Cardinals play, being fourth. That's aggressive for me. I think that's a nice ballpark, but settle down. And then Oracle Park in San Francisco, where the Giants play, widely considered to be right there with PNC and Camden among the elite in Major League Baseball, is fifth. They also have Fenway seventh. That's a great baseball museum, and that's a really historical, amazing place to go. But I'm not a big Fenway guy. I think Fenway's overrated. In the same vein, Wrigley, which is also a museum, they've both been around. They were built a year apart. One was built in 1911. One was built in 1912. I think I have those numbers right. I'm Team Wrigley big time. I love Wrigley Field, which has been renovated beautifully. I think Fenway is uncomfortable and not only small, but like just walking around is difficult. I'm not a huge fan of Fenway, if not for the history anyway. But obviously it's worth going to.
Yeah, and just to round out the couple other D.C. sports ones, Nationals Park ranks 32, and then Capital One Arena, home of the Wizards and Caps, ranks 70th.
By the way, Nats Park at 32 is decent, right?
It's pretty surprising.
It's a good showing for Nats Park.
Generally, when you look at lists that involve baseball stadiums, Nats Park kind of usually ranks somewhere in the 20s. On this particular list, they got
some
love. I will
say, just looking quickly, and I haven't figured all of them out, it does seem like it's very baseball-friendly, this list. Like, I would imagine they're still in the 20 range. There's not that many baseball ballparks behind them. It looks like a lot of the basketball venues. And again, they did this based on ratings and reviews on Yelp, Google, TripAdvisor, and Facebook. But however they did it, I don't know if you agree with this, Darius, it seems like it skews a little bit toward people liking the ballparks more than certainly the arenas and to some extent the NFL stadium.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. And like you also mentioned before, it seems like some of the newer stadiums definitely aren't getting love. Because I see like Chase Center, which is the new arena that the Warriors have. That ranks in the 80s. Like, that doesn't make any sense. A brand spanking new arena that's probably
Intuit
beautiful.
Dome is listed at 84th. It hasn't even opened.
Nobody's even stepped foot in there yet, except from Darren Haynes.
Yeah, what Yelp reviews are you getting on a place that's never been sat in? I'm not telling you it's gospel, but these lists are sometimes entertaining. And the fact that the X is listed at 90th out of 90 should be a scarlet letter badge of honor for those of you season ticket holders, it'll go out there all season long. Let's talk to Robert Mays of The Athletic about his tour around training camps and his time with the Commanders next on Grant and Danny.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.